How to do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, August 28th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamon. I'm coming to you from a special location today. We are here in the Daily Observations Thunderdome with my two guests ready to throw down. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Good morning, Kelly. Good morning, Charlotte.
Also with me, Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello, John is wrong. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming to Charlotte's TED Talk.
Getting an early start.
Right out of the gate, we've got the bell. It's going to be that kind of show, kids. Buckle up. So, our first topic today is the mid-range iPhone. And go!
John is wrong.
Okay, let's back up a little bit. John wrote an editorial about the mid-range iPhone.
Well, let's go back even further. Over on Macworld, Jason Cross wrote what I thought was an interesting piece and linked to over on the Mac Observer, imagining what a mid-range iPhone would look like, what its capabilities would be, and so on. And I thought that was an interesting piece. Then our good friend...
Yeah, but you said in your teaser, you said you're not sure he's right.
I'm not sure it's right that it will happen. I would like it to happen. But our good friend, your friend of mine, John Martellaro, obviously thinks Apple should charge everyone like a month's rent for a phone.
Well, I don't think it's a matter of greed or wishful
thinking. Because it's Apple, so it's okay.
No, I don't think. I think it's technically difficult because you got components in the phone. You got the carrier modem. You got the memory. You got the bus. You got the Wi-Fi subsystem, you've got the display and the glass, and you've got the secure enclave, and you've got all these components that go into the phone. And the question is, if you're going to save $200 retail, or maybe $50 in parts, where are you going to start scavenging a loss of functionality? And then as soon as you start doing that, two things happen. People buy the phone because they think it's less expensive. They discover that it's missing something that they needed. And then developers are posed with the process of having to account for the fact that features are missing, and then they've got to rewrite their code to account for which model are we on, what's missing, what don't we have.
Okay.
It creates a nightmare. Okay. So that's just one part of it.
What functionality could Apple, being Apple, not produce for $200 a phone less? One. Two, so what if it answers that question? Sorry, and the point that I thought Jason made that was the most important, and a commenter on the piece also made the point, Apple is moving into the services game. We're going to talk about one element of that a bit later in the show. The way that strategy only works if you have loads of people with iPhones in their hands to get the services. If people are getting fed up with paying so much for iPhones and getting cheaper Android phones that do most of what normal users want to a pretty good standard, you know, then the services bit of Apple doesn't work either.
That's totally valid. Like, I'm not going to be excited to pay for iCloud storage if my entire budget went to my phone
or
whatever.
Sure, so. that race to the bottom argument has been used for decades against Apple.
Okay, but
could buy a MacBook Pro for $400.
But we're not talking about the bottom.
In the education market.
This isn't the bottom, John.
If only a MacBook Air were to cost $299, I can go out and buy a Dell laptop for
$299.
No,
it's not about that. The point is, when you spend
$799
or goodness know whatever it is now on a top-end iPhone, we'll find out in a couple of weeks how much they're going to charge people for the latest version. Mm-hmm. What you're more likely to get Apple Music, to get subscribe right. to Apple Arcade, probably to get Apple TV Plus. Those things matter. You can probably make up the $200 you've lost in the sales in very easily on services, but you're not going to get that revenue if people don't buy the device.
Right. And here's the thing about this, like, John, particularly. So first of all, Charlotte, I agree with you. This is more, you know.
This was my point when I was annoyed about the iPod Air as well being a ridiculous price.
Well, this is the sort of the opposite of what Apple did before with hardware, which was we created the iTunes store to give people music to put on the iPods we sold them. And now, like, we want to sell you the hardware, and we have, you know, these other things that we want to that are going to make that easier to do. Now, John, one of the things that you talked about was sort of stepping back, stepping down, taking things away from the phone. And my thoughts on that were twofold. First, if I'm coming from an older phone, like right now I have an iPhone 8. So if I were to, even after they announce everything next month, if I were to get an iPhone 10, that's still an upgrade, even though it's an older phone. So if I'm coming from something older, like you were talking about, hold on,
hold on though.
No, hold on. You were talking about putting like a less great camera in a phone, but you're talking about less great than the top end model now. And one of the things that I thought, so first of all, like if I'm coming from a 5S or a 6S or something with a crap battery, then anything is going to be an upgrade. Even if I went to an 8, it would be really exciting because it would be a lot better than the phone I have in my hand today. Now, the other thing is, one of the things that I thought was interesting about the SE when they did that, which was 6S innards in a 5S case, the thing nobody really wants to talk about with that phone is that, first of all, physically, it's very easy to operate with one hand. Your thumb can reach everything almost regardless of the size of your hand, which makes the 5S a really nice phone to hold onto and made the SE really nice. And when Apple did that, they had already put all the design effort into the case. The R&D to put everything inside it was done. The headphone jack and the lightning port and the home button and the Touch ID and all of that stuff had already been built and existed, and nobody had to do anything particularly special to make all of that phone exist in the world. So if you were to take, for example, and I'm totally making this up, so don't pick apart my logic on this, if they were to find a way to take iPhone 10 insides, iPhone 10, not 10S, not 10R, not whatever, straight up 10, the first one with Face ID, if they were able to take those parts and put them in an iPhone 7, 8 size case, not plus, just 7 or 8 size case, so it's a little bit smaller, a little more convenient, but it has Face ID instead of Touch ID, that would mostly be a really good sell for a lot of people who are not people who are maxing out the storage on their phone, the processor on their phone, they're not doing video editing, they're not doing extraordinary work out in the field that relies on them having a mobile device. That stuff would be pretty easy, I think.
Can I defend myself now?
Yes.
I don't think you save that much money with a smaller case. I think there are people who want a bigger display because they do things like maps and video watching. So there's as many people who want a big display as want a smaller display.
Yeah.
There's a system engineering hunch that I have that when you start trying to put old parts into a new machine with a new architecture, you start running into system integration issues.
You could. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got
these processors that are designed to handle a lot of operations for a very fast camera that has a lot of pixels, and then you put a bad camera in there, and then you have a problem with trying to match old components to new processor architecture and memory architecture, and you got to balance the whole thing. And the question is, after you do this and you put a poorer camera in there and you restrict the memory of the RAM, you save $2 or $3. And the penalty is that the customer ends up buying a brand new phone. They think they got a good price. They think they got a great Apple product. And then they find out some of their apps don't work because it doesn't have the barometer doesn't work because there's no pressure sensor in there anymore.
That doesn't need to happen.
It's inevitably going to happen.
There's going to be people mad that their iPhone doesn't do Android Pay, too. Like, you can't account for people.
No, that's not a good argument.
It is a good argument. But there will always be people because people buy iPhones.
Right. But also, I actually even come from it from a slightly even different perspective to John. Yes, of course, you could look at it on a per unit basis. If you take X component out, you can make it X amount cheaper. You could also say, and I can hear John exploding as I say this, you could also say, we are Apple. We have gazillions of dollars in the bank, we can just control the price point. We can use that to control the price point of our devices to get more people in the ecosystem, especially as people, as we are trying to make more money from that ecosystem.
Apple has never done that. Apple has never
But that doesn't mean it shouldn't. Just because it hasn't done it before, it doesn't mean it can't do it.
Right. And that doesn't mean that's not a...
That's the road to perdition to do that.
But that doesn't mean it's not a viable idea, because...
Because then you end up being a wannabe. You say, oh, our product, we have to lower the price. We have to take a cut. We have to be less profitable in order to feel needy and get a lot more people using our product. And that, other companies have tried that, and they end up in trouble.
But see, here's the thing. They phones to billions of people in China and India. Yeah. And so, no, that doesn't work either. I'm sorry. No,
John, we're not talking about making a $99 iPhone either. No, like, that's not what we're saying.
Well, I have a problem. I have a problem with conjuring up a desirable price. I mean, how do you decide what a good phone should cost? You take a basic iPhone XR, which is what retails for $749 base. And then out of the blue, you decide, all right, I think personally, some author says that it's a good price for a phone would be, you know, $499 or $529. Uh-huh. Journalists make up these prices out of the blue all the time with no engineering sense, with no feedback from Apple on how much it costs to reduce the price of a phone by $200 arbitrarily, and no market analysis to decide whether $549 is really an attractive price. If you had a choice between...
It's a lot more attractive than $749, obviously.
Well, yeah, but when you think about people who are on a plan, that's $10 a month. And when people,
okay, that might matter to some people.
Right.
It doesn't matter
and
to most
you might
iPhone
decide
buyers.
And
I don't think
you
it
might
matters
also
to most iPhone buyers.
I disagree. And you might get other iPhone buyers. And also, you might end up, instead of spending the $10 a month on your phone, you might, and maybe giving that to the carrier, you might give it direct to Apple via Apple Arcade or a similar service.
Yeah. Because now, for the same price, I can have an iPhone, maybe not the top level iPhone, but I can have an iPhone and Apple Music or TV Plus or Arcade Plus or whatever it is. I can do that. And
well, you get into model crashing. What happens is that you got an iPhone XZ, which is the $500 phone.
Yeah.
Then you got the XR, and then you got the XS Max and XS, and then you got XS.
Yeah,
I'm
but
sorry,
if Apple's going to put three phones out.
Max. And all of a sudden you're looking at all these comparison charts, and then you buy the wrong model, and then you get into buyer's remorse because you figure if I'd only spent $100 more, I could have gotten a better phone.
So what you're
John,
saying is last
saying
September when they introduced three models of iPhone, what you're saying is last September, because that's what happened. So
well, they're already on the edge. They're already on the edge.
I know.
And it doesn't have to become Samsung with 8 million different models.
Exactly.
You can keep it neat and tidy and apple-y. Just find better ways to make the price a bit more competitive and get people into the ecosystem.
All right, to your corners. To your corners. We have to take a break. Everybody to the corner. Get your water. Let the cup man give you a pep talk. And for a minute, I'm going to talk to you about our sponsor this week. Our sponsor is OmniFocus. OmniFocus is a professional to-do manager that helps you, as its tagline says, accomplish more every day. You would be surprised to see that one of Charlotte's to-dos in OmniFocus is make sure John knows he's wrong. OmniFocus is available on
Top
Mac
of
OS.
The list.
OmniFocus is available on Mac OS. It's a universal iOS app with an Apple Watch complication, so you can manage all your tasks right there on your arm. It will remember everything for you, and it will remind you based on date or time or location, all these different criteria. And if you are a GTD person, this is a great trusted system because you can enter your tasks from anywhere. And that includes from a PC, because this summer they've debuted OmniFocus for web. So anywhere you can pull up a web page, you can pull up your tasks and make sure you're on track. The pro version will give you even further customization of views and reminders. It gives you AppleScript functionality and lots more. You can get a free 2-week trial at omnifocus.com. And we'd like to thank them for sponsoring the show today. Now, the other thing I will point out to you is if you think that John is wrong, if you think Charlotte is wrong, if you think it must be legal where all three of us are, because clearly we're on something to come to these conclusions, you can let us know that at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. And we look forward to your discussion, particularly as we start gearing up for the actual event where we really are going to get to see some number, some non-zero number of phones get their debut and figure out what we're going to do. So
you get an iPhone, you get an iPhone, you all get a model of iPhone.
That's why Oprah's on. 100%. That's why they brought her into the fold, so that she could stand 100%. There at the event in September. I'm going to set the timer on that rumor becoming official. Oprah's going to be at the media event. You get an iPhone, you get an iPhone. So our second topic today is, Charlotte, you wrote an editorial, speaking of Apple and services, like we were earlier, about Apple and media and their presence within it.
Yeah, so at the beginning, it felt, I have to say, a little bit half-hearted. You know, they were dabbling into it. We heard rumors of Tim Cook really interfering and making some and the result was some pretty boring television. It didn't seem to be quite going to plan. They were only putting $1 billion into it, which is nothing really compared to everyone else.
$1 billion. What are they going to do with $1 billion?
I don't even get out of bed for more than $1 billion.
Yeah. Billionaire, pretty soon it adds up to real money.
Mm. Exactly. But I think things are starting to change. There's one thing I do agree with John on quite strongly, and that was the piece he wrote a while back which laid out a very good argument as to why Disney had got a jump on Apple with Disney Plus, not least because of the price point it was offering. But what I think is happening now is Apple is realizing it's really in a fight, and this fight is expensive and tough, and it's starting to take its entry into the media world a little bit more seriously. So there was rumors via the Financial Times that it committed $6 billion worth of money into original content. Some people disputed that, but it's clear that it's, and if nothing else, it's increased how much it's putting into content. Mm-hmm. It has also, over the last few months, made some pretty serious acquisitions, hires, particularly on the PR front of people into its team. So it hired someone who was responsible for the marketing and social media campaigns for the Hunger Games over at Lionsgate. Mm-hmm. It's hired someone from Disney, which is interesting, to be its director of video services in London. Those are both some serious moves. Okay, yes, Apple can always flash a checkbook at people and get who they want, really. But, you know, you don't convince those people to come unless you're offering a pretty serious vision, I would say. The trailers we've seen that I posted to the site look pretty good. This is not Planets of the App stuff. This is serious TV, it looks like. I think we all enjoyed the morning TV show.
The morning show trailer, yeah.
Morning show, and also the Dickinson one looked pretty good, quite fun. So look, and that's going to headline the Tribeca Film Festival. So, you know, they're taking this seriously.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite interesting, because they're under a huge amount of pressure, but it looks like they're not quite going down without a fight.
Well, and what's interesting to me is how quickly this is relatively... You know, how quickly this is happening.
Escalated.
Yeah. Well, for Apple, yeah. Because, you know, it took Netflix a while to develop anything original. And we've gone from that to Apple, which, as to the best of anyone's knowledge, has no catalog of shows they did not produce. So, to me, that's the part that's interesting, is that we've gone from Netflix, which was like one place to watch a bunch of other people's movies and stuff, to Apple, which is going to have a service where, at least to start, all you can watch is Apple's own stuff. Now, John, you had a slightly different take on why this was interesting.
Well, I agree with Charlotte that it's important to hire these people to do promotion, because that was a missing element to the whole affair. But what I'm concerned about a little bit is that Apple has gone from an unjustified overconfidence that the quality of the content would carry the day, And then realizing with the Disney's Plus situation that just touting the quality isn't going to help with Disney's large portfolio. And so in addition to the, so they transitioned from touting the quality as the major tout and thing to brag about, to hiring professionals to put a spin on, to put it mildly, mm-hmm. on the content in order to market people into wanting the content, as opposed to letting people conclude that the quality is so high they must subscribe, mm-hmm. which apparently wasn't going to work very well. So I think these people that they, that Apple just hired, Capriani and De Palma, are under, as you say, a lot of pressure because they've got not a lot to work with. And they're going to have to, they're going to have to take the responsibility for advertising and marketing and convincing people that this is something that they want to do. Mm-hmm. And if they don't do very well, they're going to be out very quickly.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a tough job.
And
but it's good that Apple's doing that because they've got to make this transition. They've got to, as Charlotte said, they've got to treat it more professionally, more. With a broader portfolio of weapons and tools to promote their product.
I definitely still feel like, hiring people who are good at marketing and PR and that sort of thing, that's, you know, particularly with regards to motion pictures, that comes out great. Like, yeah, that's a thing that's necessary.
I also think what it shows is almost a bit of humility on Apple's part, right? Apple, I think at the beginning, it came across like it had that. Now, had the attitude, we're Apple, we can do whatever we want. Obviously, mm-hmm. if we do TV, we're going to be great at TV.
Yeah.
And look, okay, of course, rival studios and stuff want to spin it like that. But anyway, that's how it, for whatever reason, that is how it came across. Now, Apple is responding in a correct way, which is, we are the underdogs in this game.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have HBO shows. We don't have Disney shows. We don't have Star Wars. We don't have Warner Brothers. We don't have Friends. Mm-hmm. We are the underdogs.
Yeah.
But if we can get people, if we can use industry standard procedures to get people excited about our content through the correct kind of marketing and social media advertising, maybe we can whip up a fervor and get people excited.
Correct. And making sure that we invest enough in the content that it's not rubbish, that it's worth getting excited over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially, again, at this point, you know, the thing that I keep talking about is there's no then what. You know, we don't know. Once I watch Apple's shows, did I get to the end of TV Plus? Because right now it sounds like that's the case. So I still want to know what sort of catalog options they're going to have available. Because I think that's going to be the biggest hurdle is what if I can't watch, you know, because that was one of the things that people always really liked about Netflix was you could sort of surf around and like, oh, I didn't know they had the A-Team on Netflix or, you know, whatever. And now that I know there's something else
on Netflix,
I don't know. I may be being optimistic. They did have Miami Vice for a while and I watched a whole lot of Miami Vice and that was great because I stumbled across it. And that's a thing that right now Apple doesn't have is like, I'm just going to sit down and watch something and kind of see what's there. And the, you know, even if the stuff is great, if you only have, you know, half a dozen shows, that's not going to go over very well. So that's a thing that I still wonder about. And hopefully we will find out more. Maybe they'll give us a sneak peek of a new thing that they're going to announce with TV Plus at the September event. Maybe it'll get a casual mention. So everybody can watch whatever show that is on their new shiny new iPhones. So we'll
have to see. There was a time, Kelly, when decisions were made at Netflix and Amazon where they wanted to make sure you knew you were on the Amazon channel.
Uh-huh.
Or you knew you were on Netflix by virtue of the environment you were in.
Yeah.
To promote that particular product. And Apple had this vision, oh, we're going to create this grandiose TV app scheme where you don't really care where it's coming from. You just care about the content. Apple will live to regret that.
Yes. Not the least of which because that interface drives me up a wall and I know I'm not the only one, but yeah, I think that's another thing that Apple's going to have to overcome is because if I'm still subscribed to another service, I could be watching stuff from them and not know the difference.
Right.
So, Yeah, we're going to have to dig into that a little further once John and I both spend a little more time swearing at the TV app so we can talk about it a little better. Until then, I'm glad to announce that both of you who have made it out of the TDO Thunderdome alive today. Charlotte, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And John, right or wrong, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. Charlotte, you're great.
John, you're my favorite. Ugh.
I'm right here, Charlotte. Anyway, thank you so much, both of you, for being here today. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.